Welcome to Music History Monday for September 3rd, 2018. This is Bob Greenberg, and the title of this week's podcast is One of a Kind. The phrase one of a kind would seem fairly useless when applied to the arts in general or music specifically. Really, aren't all great musical artists, by definition, one of a kind? Monteverdi, Purcell, Sebastian Bach, Mozart, Beethoven, Wagner, Stravinsky, Springsteen, Weird Al? Yes, these good folks and many, many, many more are indeed all one of a kind. But then there are those very few who are so truly weird. Sorry, Maestro Yankovic, you are not really that weird. So far out, so iconoclastic, so radical, subversive, and idiosyncratic that they stand utterly solitary, disconnected from anything and everything but themselves, singular, detached, alone, truly one of a kind. Such a person was the American experimenter, instrument builder, guru, high priest, and composer, and that's composer in scare quotes, Harry Partch, who died on September 3rd, 1974, 44 years ago today, in San Diego, California, at the age of 73. Harry Partch was one of a kind. He rejected the entire Western musical tradition and created in its place an alternative musical universe for which he proselytized and composed. He created a tuning system that divided the octave into 43 different pitches. He created a complicated tablature-based notational system that remains almost indecipherable to anyone but one of his disciples. He designed and built a wide variety of stringed and percussion instruments capable of playing his complex tunings. Please, a brief word about these instruments. Whatever we think about Partch's ideas and his music, he was an inventor and builder of genius. The instruments are strikingly beautiful, sonically gorgeous, and so exotic as to make the Cantina Band in Star Wars look like a drab old string quartet by comparison. In a letter to a friend, Partch described a bamboo marimba he called the Yucal Blossom this way, quote, "This is the third instrument in which I have used the contorted boughs of eucalyptus as part of the bass structure. A branch with an appropriate crotch extends from a redwood base. One arm above the crotch is cut at the top and the angle desired for the disc holding the bamboo and is there bolted to the disc. The other extends upwards through a slot in the disc and holds the music rack." Unquote. Yeah, that makes no sense to me either. But a picture of a Yucal Blossom can be seen on my website. Partch, like so many percussionists before and after him, built his percussion instruments using found objects. In the case of an instrument Partch calls spoils of war, the found objects are 7 artillery shells cut to different sizes. The Mazda marimba consists of 24 gradually larger light bulbs with their guts removed. Ha! Best to play this instrument very carefully, as a heavy hand will result in a lot of broken glass. Then there are the cloud chamber bowls, one of Partch's most famous creations. These are large Pyrex gongs that began their lives as Pyrex carboys, big rounded jugs with narrow necks used for holding corrosive liquids. Partch discovered them while dumpster diving outside the radiation laboratory at the University of California, Berkeley. My friends, what a life he led. Partch was born on June 24, 1901 in Oakland, California, at 5861 Occidental Street. The house is still there. According to Google Maps, it is a 14-minute drive from where I am recording these words. He grew up in Benson, Arizona, some 50 miles east of Tucson, which was then still the Wild West. In 1919, at the age of 18, he moved to Los Angeles, where he studied music at the University of Southern California by day and played piano for silent movies at night. Good-looking and gay, Parch entered into a torrid love affair with a struggling actor named Ramon Samaniego. Samaniego changed his name to Ramon Novaro and went on to fame and fortune as a silent movie star, but not before dropping Parch like a hot burrito. According to Parch's biographer, Bob Gilmore, quote, "That experience cemented Parch's determination to reject the mainstream in favor of the companionship of outcasts," unquote. Claiming that his teachers were a bunch of useless old farts, Parch dropped out of USC. He moved to San Francisco, read, composed, and by 1923 had come to the conclusion that equal-tempered tuning was a useless and artificial construct, incapable of creating the sorts of melodic and harmonic nuances he sought. Parch once referred to the piano keyboard as, quote, 12 black and white prison bars in front of musical freedom, unquote. In 1930, having concluded that the entire Western musical tradition was just so much useless humbug, he burned all of his music in a pot-bellied stove. Because of this little incendiary tantrum, Parch's earliest surviving music dates to 1931, when he was working with a 29-pitch octave. This music came to the attention of Henry Cowell, yet another great American one-of-a-kind, who became something of a patron of Parch. By 1935, Parch's gamut, his 43-pitch octave, was in place, and he was building instruments capable of producing those pitches. But claiming that the whole damned musical establishment, which either ignored or made fun of his music, was humbug, Parch again dropped out and chose to live a life that most folks there during the Great Depression did everything they could to avoid. He chose to become a hobo. He rode the rails, he did manual labor, slept in federal work camps or under the stars, and thought about music. While traveling through the Southern California town of Barstow, Parch spotted a bunch of inscriptions, graffiti, left by hitchhikers on a highway railing. He jotted them down, and they became the basis for what is considered to be one of his most important works, Barstow, composed in 1941 and then revised in 1968. By the early 1940s, Parch had given up riding the rails, though his life continued to be that of, if not a hobo, then certainly a nomad. I would tell you that reading Bob Gilmore's superb biography of Parch can actually induce motion sickness. The locales change so quickly. Occasional academic appointments at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, Mills College in Oakland, and the University of Illinois at Urbana never lasted for long, thanks to Parch's bad attitude towards academia, and academia's equally bad attitude towards Parch. This self-described vagabond's last stop was San Diego, where he died after suffering a heart attack on September 3rd, 1974, age 73. Parch's desire to create a self-described corporeal music, one that combined instrumental performance, singing, dance, ritual, and drama, was Wagner-like in its ambition. But even more than Wagner, or truly any composer before or since, Parch also tried his best to create an entirely new musical syntax, a new music in which he himself, Harry Parch, was a combination high priest, guru, and maestro. To his fans, Parch was a messianic visionary. To his detractors, he was a crank. But even his detractors have to admit that Parch was a very interesting crank. For our information, Parch's instruments presently reside at the University of Washington in Seattle. For those wanting to know more about Harry Parch and for a detailed examination of what is probably his most important work, Barstow, I would direct your attention to my Great Courses survey, The Great Music of the 20th Century, which can be sampled and downloaded at my website at robertgreenbergmusic.com. Thank you.